You're listening to a podcast from 702.
8 minutes after 10 o'clock. Good morning. And if you're still listening, I hope you are listening. We will be having for the next 2 hours a 702 election debate. It is live broadcasting, so hopefully everything runs very smoothly. At the moment, I can't really hear myself properly in my ear. But wherever you might be listening from in the world, what we wanted to do today was to focus deliberately and quite unapologetically on how the elections that will be held on the 8th of May affect young South Africans. And what is a young South African? Depends who you ask. If you ask the ANC Youth League, you might get a very different answer from if you ask someone in high school. We have in mind, broadly speaking, South Africans under the age of 40, probably under the age of 35 in particular. And when you look at the stats of how we are doing as a nation, it is young voters, the ones that are here with me at Prime Media and Sandton, who are in particularly gifted a broken society, an imperfect society. And these are the voters that are the leaders of tomorrow. And the politicians that we have invited or asked the parties to give some of their representatives to be part of this conversation are also the leaders, many of them already active in politics, but the ones that will eventually take over the reins of party leadership in some of our main political parties. I'm going to have a very light touch for the next 2 hours as a broadcaster, not because I'm lazy and I want to tap out, but because I really think it is critically important that we actually center the voices of young South Africans. I'm also going to try my best. I might fail. Marva will keep me honest. Do not use the word youth and young very often. This morning we were deciding what hashtag to use on Twitter, and we're going with the hashtag 702 election debate. And the reason we don't have the word youth or young in it is that when old farts speak about politics, often very poorly, we don't age them. And yet when younger South Africans under the ages of 40 or 35 do, we tend to infantilize young people as if they can't speak about the state of the nation and they can only speak to their own lived experiences as younger South Africans. So in a sense, this is an election debate full stop, and we shouldn't really qualify it. But for your voyeuristic interest, if you could see the pictures that we will tweet, if you're watching on the 702 Facebook page, you will see that quite deliberately it is an audience of young South Africans that are here with me. I'm probably one of the oldest people in this building at the age of 40, and young people on the panel. The other thing we thought we would do is to not put the politicians on stage. And that's quite deliberate, because politicians should ideally be humble servant leaders, and they should be listening attentively to what the needs and the thoughts and the viewpoints are of voters and of the public, and be responsive to those instead of being treated like celebrities. So the real celebrities are the members, firstly, of the parties who are here. Thank you very much for taking time out of your busy days to be here, to come all the way to Sandton. The traffic has been horrible. The weather is horrible. And then also my panel members that I will introduce shortly. That's about as wordy as I'm going to get. Other than that, I will steer the conversation in a couple of themes over the next 2 hours. But for the most part, I really also just want to listen quite actively as a broadcaster, as a political analyst, and understand what is going on inside the headspace of young South Africans. So let me introduce the panel that you see in front of you. Immediately here on my left is Rekgotso Fetse Chikane, who's the author of the excellent book, Breaking a Rainbow, Building a Nation. I hope you've read it. If you haven't, I recommend it highly. You can go back and listen to my author interview with him on the 702 website. You'll find it easily archived there. Sithembiso Yinganwe, who is the Freedom Charter Foundation founder. Luando Khaso, who's an attorney and also, of course, with Including Society founder and an excellent writer. Read one of Luanda's pieces just in the early hours of this morning, coincidentally. And next to her is Takira Safal, who's the Deputy Secretary General of the WITS PYA-led SRC. So this is how we're going to proceed. I'm going to give each of them a minute, 2 minutes maximum, to just tell me something that I'm curious about, and you can fill it out however you want to. What are the issues that are most important to each of you, and where are you at in terms of the political parties? Have they really understood what the most important needs are of younger voters in particular? We often get it wrong as political analysts, which is the other hat that I wear. We thought that land would be a big debate. That wasn't the case. We thought the economy would dominate, and maybe in the media we're guilty of not centering it. That hasn't really been the case. And I found myself as a voter, as a political animal, not even knowing who I'm going to vote for. And we're going to start, Rekgotso Fetse, firstly with you. I don't know whether you have any clarity on who you're going to vote for, but introduce yourself and tell us what you think are some of the most important issues that you want to see unfolding in the discussion in this particular election debate.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. So in my mind, I would say, so one of the first things I'll say is like my vote is my secret, but it's also very clear in my mind. And one of the reasons for that is I don't think our country's done enough. So earlier today, I was having a conversation with someone, and they used that typical line of, you know what, we're so early in our democracy. It's only been 20 years. You guys should just be patient in the changes that will eventually come. And my response was, why should my generation be the sacrificial lamb for this country's development? Why should my generation sit back and say, no, it's fine. We're going to give you guys 30, 40 years, regardless of who's in power, to change this country. But whilst you're doing that, we'll become this last generation. And I think the most important thing coming into this election, at least in my view, is this idea that South Africa is creating a lost generation of young people, right? When you have unemployment and youth unemployment at the levels that it's at, when you have young people who are not employed in education or any form of training, sitting at just under 4 million people, and then saying when we kickstart this economy, that group of individuals will be ready, equipped, and educated to kickstart this economy with us, that doesn't happen, right? You're going to be sitting in a situation where if the status quo of the country doesn't change in the next 10 years, right, when this generation becomes 40 and 50, how do we expect them to grow the economy, right? So one of my big important things is how do we ensure that this generation doesn't become lost? How do we start tackling it? The big thing everyone will say, fix education and it will fix everything else. No, it's more complicated than that. People will say, fix the unemployment issue. No, it's more complicated than that. And for me, it is the belief that South Africa lives in a normal society that hampers our generation the most. And what I would want from this election is young people saying, we don't live in a normal society with inequality, poverty, and unemployment at the levels that they're in. We cannot sit back and say, this is an A-OK country and everything is fine.
Do you think, just in 30 seconds,
yep.
do you think that the main political parties, or even the smaller ones and the new entrants, have spoken compellingly enough into those issues?
I think they have on paper. But it's very different in action, right? So in action, these difficulties in being a national government, right? Because you're the incumbent and you suffer from the sins of being an incumbent. So those difficulties. Then you have opposition parties who are dealing with coalition politics and dealing with it quite badly in certain respects, right? And failing quite dismally in certain municipalities, right? So the one thing I think they do well is write down their views perfectly. All the manifestos are beautifully written. Your editors are fantastic. What we really do want to see now is your actions, in particular smaller parties as well.
Okay, so Tembiso.
Thank you very much. I think my colleague has just spoken a lot about a lot of things. He has touched some serious issues. You know, mine will also be like a land issue. When you check now current situation which is happening in KZN, we are having flood. Beside the floods, our problem is that people are not owning the land which they reside on it. So if you may check, most of the time, things are not happening the way we want them as people, you know. Our political parties will always tell you that everything that is happening, it's for us as people. Your vote is your voice. But if you may check, my vote is not my voice. At the same time, if you may check the way they are doing things, after you voted, they are not even consulting people. They always speak about public participation, which is not happening. So there are a lot of issues that we can speak about. But one thing that makes me wonder to say, are these people always thinking about themselves, or are they always thinking about the people? Because if you may check, including the boundaries that they are bringing, we have these things, your ward, there's ward 17, there's ward what. It's still the system that was used by apartheid, where you will find the areas where the Zulu sections, Tutsi section. These boundaries are bounding us to say you cannot interfere in another person's ward. But if you may check, if we may scrap away all those things, it can give us a sense that we are united. But they are also coming with a system of divide and rule. You know, everything that is happening is not the way they are implementing it on paper. Because if physically we need to see it happening, everything that they are writing down, it's good and it's nice. But at the same time, when it comes to implementation, they are failing us.
When you say they, are you talking about the ANC?
I might be saying ANC and everyone who's part of the parliament, because you can't be saying ANC alone, because there are a lot of people who are sitting in parliament.
Okay, so can I ask you this question? We can come back to it later. Are you disillusioned with politics in general? given what you've just said about how it doesn't deliver on very important needs that you have.
Yes.
But are you going to vote?
I need to think about it very deeply.
Okay. It's an honest answer. We'll come to that a little bit later. Luando.
Hi, CBS. I guess what I've been reflecting on, you know, with the upcoming election is sort of the past 9 to 10 years. And being a lawyer in terms of my background, but foremost being a citizen, is the desire for
okay, just hold on. Just give her your mic there. Thanks.
I think it's very important for us to understand our and seeing that what is set out in terms of governance in the Constitution and what happens practically are not the same thing. So it made me wonder, are we really a democracy? If a democracy is meant to be a representative one, does Parliament represent the people? Does Parliament hold the executive accountable? Who has power? You know, it seems that the power is offsite. It's beyond the election. Yes, we have, you know, an expression of power through voting. But when you look at how power is exercised, it's through deployment, you know, it's through the political, you know, headquarters, political party headquarters and their own internal constitutions. If you look at instances in the past where we've changed presidents and not through a democratic method in a way, but through internal party processes, I often wonder, do people understand how that decision was reached? And I think what it robs us of centralizing, you know, the power in political parties is that there's a lack of transparency and there's a lack of connection between constituencies and parliamentarians. And we have parliamentarians that see themselves as, you know, serving political parties and not the people. Yes, we talk about situations in Alex and we talk about the Kolobeni community and mining and all of that. And we hear the voices of the people, but who represents these people in Parliament and what view do they have of the situation and what connection do they have, organic connection to the constituencies? So for me, you know, you have to wonder that our text says we are a democracy, but in practice, I wonder if we're reflecting on what a democracy really is and whether people are finding representation and whether that representation is in Parliament or centered in parties.
I hear you, Luanda, but I want to ask you this follow-up question, right? Yeah. And obviously, as a Tony Leon called me a failed lawyer yesterday, which is an accurate description. As someone like you who also is very keen to keep tabs on our constitutional normative framework and how it plays out, I totally agree with you. Mm. And you've made the point that you've just made eloquently in your latest opinion piece as well.
Thanks.
But where does that leave you then? I mean, you've got politicians here in the front row who want you to vote for them.
Yeah.
Here you are, following Sithembiso. Mm. You're tagging with him by giving this fascinating, very sophisticated, and in my opinion, subjectively accurate critique of what is wrong with the way in which power is diffused in our politics.
Yeah.
But on May the 8th, these guys want you to vote firstly, and hopefully to vote for one of them.
Mm.
Is an implied conclusion of your opening remark that you too are not even sure whether you will vote, given your analysis? Or do you have two or three very specific questions which, once I give the mic to them, you'd want them to answer in order to increase the odds of you voting for them?
I'm voting. You know, I understand that my vote won't be a perfect one. It won't be for a perfect party. But I think it's important to engage in that manner. And even if you don't vote, Tembi, so you are voting in a way. So you are exercising your power in a certain way. So I'm interested in where you'll land on that. But if I had to direct my remarks to political parties, is that once you put into Parliament, right, how do I know that your parliamentarians are going to fulfill the objectives that are set out in the Constitution, that you represent the people and not your headquarters? How are you going to reflect the views of the people who are going to the polls on the 8th of May and their needs? And it seems ultimately it ends up being, you know, the headquarters that have power over the people. more than the people do. So that's
thanks for
my question.
Zakira, are your opening remarks?
So hi, it's Zakira.
Sorry?
Zakira.
Zakira, okay.
Yes.
I'll have a conversation with my producers later.
I'm a student leader, and my main concerns would be dealing with the many issues that students are facing in the tertiary institutions. So my questions would mainly be focused around the accommodation crisis that we've had on our hands. And as a member of the SRC, someone who's been dealing with that crisis hands-on. And I'd be also focusing on questions around free education. I'd be focusing on questions around graduate employment. These things are very close to me, considering the fact that, as I said, we've been dealing with students who are suffering. And as a student in university right now, my main concern is whether or not I'm going to leave my institution knowing that I have a job set out for me. So I know a lot of other students, especially poor black students who are there to better their lives, have that exact same concern. So those are more or less the questions I'll be asking.
Okay. One of the big issues I want us to focus on immediately, you flagged a couple of them, but out of interest, any of these political parties that you see here, or even the ones that are not in the room, have any of them for you convincingly articulated what they will do for you when it comes to unemployment, for example, which is one of your concerns? The other thing you flagged, which we'll come to later, is the question of education. Has anyone bowled you over with both a desirable and a feasible plan for dealing with the unemployment crisis, particularly the way it disproportionately affects young South Africans?
So, to an extent, yes. I'm not going to name the party right now. I'm going to let them speak on it. But I'd be hoping to engage these parties critically about these matters and hopefully get an answer from them about both graduate employment and the issue of free education.
Okay, you're being quite coy, not giving any brownie points away. By the way, just because we're in Sandton doesn't mean you guys must be so polite. This must be the most polite audience I've had in here. If someone says something that you agree with, it sounds really awesome, feel free to give them a round of applause, to clap, to whatever. I just don't want it to be too rowdy. But I do want you to certainly respond dynamically to what's going on. I'm not sure what's going on here, but I want to direct the first question at you, Fasia, just because the ANC is the government of the day. And when I look at some of the stats, and we're going to tackle the question of youth unemployment first, the last panel member was flagging this issue. I mean, it is absolutely horrific. These stats, I don't even need to name them in order for this to be the lived reality of people in the room, right? But 7.9 million South African youth, in other words, under the age of 35, are not in employment, education, or training. So we're tackling two issues in the same breath, unemployment as well as access to education. That is a pretty good argument to not vote for the ANC, right?
Well, of course, I can't say it in that way. But, you know, when we look at the issue of unemployment, particularly youth unemployment, the first important thing that we must note is how structural it is. And I think Khotsi mentioned it, right, that we can't just say we're going to fix education or we're just going to fix the economy, that it's far more complex. But that doesn't mean that there aren't genuine, not just policy positions, but actual things that we want to implement. So let me talk actual things. Zakira, you spoke around as a young student that fear of not being able to get a job. It's a fear that I've experienced myself. And one of the reasons why we see this is around a skills mismatch, right? So what we're teaching people, not just in universities, but in TVETs and FETs, etc., doesn't necessarily match what the economy needs. And what the Department of Higher Education is currently doing is intense research with the economic development people around what the economy needs, right? So if one of the biggest drivers of our economy, which it is the automotive industry, then we need to be educating more people around, I can see what she's about to interject. We need to be educating more people around those actual skills, right? But that's just one thing on education. The actual issue here is also around employment, right? And we have this issue of structural unemployment. And there's a few things that we're going to do to increase economic growth. The one is around investment, which I think is particularly important, but also around looking at those drivers of economy, like I said, not just in terms of education, but investing in those ones as well.
I would ask you a quick follow-up, and I'm going to allow the other parties to respond after the news headlines. You know, structural is one of those words that every woke kid is fluent in the word structure, right? And what's nice about the word structure is that you don't have to talk about individual human beings. But structures don't exist. Human beings exist. Who are inside these structures that have failed us? Out of interest, just thinking aloud.
So of course, when I was talking about structural unemployment, the point that I was making is that as much as an ANC-led government, we are creating jobs. In fact, there are 16.5 million people who are currently employed, 1.5 million of which happened in the last quarter. We're not creating jobs at the same level at which people are sort of introducing themselves into the labor force. So when we talk structural, it's not just a matter of creating of jobs. It's about the kinds of jobs that we're creating and the kinds of economic stimulus that we're putting forward. And I know I'm being, you know, I'm using all these words, but really, it's about focusing on local government economies. It's about focusing on Invercargill's township economies, about expanding small businesses, about removing the red tape and the bureaucracy that exists in that space.
Tando, why are you on you are at the edge of your seat as you're listening to it?
You know, I'm so tired of the generic conversation around what we need to do. We are in now the fourth industrial revolution, and it's unfortunate because young people and women are the most vulnerable in the employment space, always the last to be employed and the first to be retrenched. And we can use the opportunity that we're now in the fourth industrial revolution to prepare the most vulnerable to enter into that sector. So, I mean, we just speak about fourth IR also in very generic terms. But when we say fourth IR, what exactly in fourth IR and how are we going to tackle that? The biggest spaces in fourth IR that we need to be focusing on is data science, data analytics, machine learning, cybersecurity. Those are the spaces in the fourth IR that we need to start tackling from basic education right throughout universities. That's where the future of employment is. Big corporates are spending big bucks to train people to become data scientists, and no one is speaking about it. That's the future of employment. And it's not good enough for our presidents to just say, ICT rollout. ICT rollout of what? What are kids going to be learning? Kids must now become experts in all of the technologies and all of the spaces that I was talking about, including teaching biomedical engineering, because the fifth industrial revolution has already started in other places in the world. That is the future of employment, and that's where we need to focus on in the next 5 years.
Okay, as we take a break, just a question to the audience in the room. Can the ANC-led government that we currently have, do you trust it to deal with youth unemployment? We'll come and get your sentiment in a second, but 25 minutes before 11 o'clock, thank you so much for tuning into the Eusebius McKaiser Show. And this morning we are focusing on an election debate, and we've got a number of political parties that are represented here. The ANC is represented by activist and ANC communications member Fasia Hassan. You've already heard from her in relation to the jobs question and education. The DA's Liyolo Mpiti is here as well, youth federal leader. The EFF's Peter Kehetse, student command president. And by the way, if I mangles anyone's name, there's no excuse, but please do correct me. The IFP's Nkuleko Shlengwa is here as well, the national chairperson of the Youth Brigade. The UDM's Yongama Zigebe is the BLF's. Is Tabi here? Or in Oranje? Oh, there she is. Tabi Mieni is here, gender and sexuality secretary. You've already heard from Tando Gumede, the Gauteng provincial leader for the political party Women Forward. Cornelius Rasebi, who is the former youth leader of COPE, is here. And the ATM's Yolanda Mafuya, who is the youth leader. I want to give each of the party reps a chance just to speak to some of the concerns that you've heard. I mean, the issues are really incredibly broad and many. Please don't hang on forever and ever. We do have time constraints. We'll start with the UDM. But you've heard the issues. Some of them are issues that are not specific to the election, a critique of the nature of politics, how elitist it is, the alienation that many young people feel, and quite frankly, many South Africans feel, regardless of their age. And then there's stuff that are specific to the youth, such as the ways in which unemployment disproportionately affects South Africans under the age of 35. How do you respond to any or some of that stuff that you've heard? And we're going to start firstly, Yongama, with you.
Thank you very much, Yusuf, and thank you to your listeners and to the panel. and our audience here in studio. You know, the UDM, since its inception in 1997, it has been betting on a wicket of corruption. And all these issues that have been raised by the panelists today are issues that are caused by that corruption. If then we do not deal with corruption today and as quick and as possible as we can, then these issues will carry on up until the next generation, and history will judge us very harshly because we could not, as young people of this country, deal with it today. If you look at the issue of education, it is monies that have went into somebody's pocket that there is no accommodation in schools today. If you look at the issue of unemployment, it is monies that have went into somebody's pocket and they built in Kandla today that should have been been focused on employment. If you're telling me about 16 million, what about the rest of the population who are unemployed today? You come up with percentages which are smaller than your problem, then that is a problem. You ask yourself, the ANC is saying that they are creating jobs, but those jobs are not sustainable.
Okay, what are you going to do for them, right? Because the easiest thing to do, and you don't need to be a political scientist to do this, is to give a State of the Nation address and to tell us the diagnosis of the problem. That's very easy. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke to your party leader on my show. He's a very affable guy. He's a nice guy. You kind of vote for him. He's a decent MP. But the part of the conversation, I have to confess, that was the most awkward was when I asked him to outline what he would do if you were the government in terms of the economy and job creation. And then suddenly it was like I was speaking Greek. Can you tell me more plainly than Bantu can, what would you do?
All right.
You've heard the stats. How would you get them down?
All right. All right, let me respond. We have said that as a UDM, the economy needs, everybody involved in order for us to come back, to come out of that economic endeavor that we are proposing with a formidable and a consensus voice. It does not need only political parties. It needs the private sector. It needs the NGOs. It needs the citizens, all of them, to come and say, okay, fine, this is what we want. Then we put everything in one bag, then we look at which one would make us a great country in order for Africa to look at South Africa and, yep, and be the best of it.
Okay.
At the apex of that economic endeavor, Eusebius, we are talking about land. Because today, everybody else has a solution towards land, but alienating others, that is the problem. You cannot have a solution which leaves other South Africans and focuses on other South Africans, which is the status quo right now. So we are economic endeavor with the land question at the apex of it. We are going to come out with solutions that are given by South Africans for South Africans in order for us to go
forward. Voters in the room, will an economic indaba pay your bills?
Okay,
your
bills are not being paid today because you are unemployed, and if we are not sitting down like we did in Kodesa, then we are not going anywhere. We are a country which prides ourselves that we can go into discussions and come back with formidable policies that will take this country forward, okay, and that's what we need to do.
Give the mic to Tana. Tana, I want you to speak. I didn't even know there was a fifth industrial revolution. Can you name the first three, by the way? Then I'll vote for you. You can tell me offline.
Yes, I'll tell you offline.
How do you respond to the sentiment that you've heard in general?
Yes.
And I'm keen for us to focus in particular on youth unemployment. Please keep it to under 2 minutes because I want to go to the audience quickly.
All right. So I had already spoken about the fourth industrial revolution and preparing, etc. So what is important is that we need to start creating jobs for the future, sustainable jobs. We must be very careful about being lobbied with jobs that are not going to be there in the next 5 or 10 years. So moving from the fourth IR, I want to speak about farming and farming potential in South Africa. 90% of production is monopolized by large commercial farmers in South Africa. And we have an opportunity and a gap to focus on the smaller scale farmers who are also commercial farmers in the country. Farming in South Africa and in the world at large, in fact, is now moving from unskilled labor to skilled labor. So we have an opportunity to train people to become skilled laborers who will also be able to use the new machinery that's going to come in the next couple of years and has already been introduced. And of course, the state needs to subsidize that kind of training, etc. I also want to speak about land, because doing all of these things means nothing if the ownership is unequal or disproportionate. And we want to push for an equitable distribution of land in South Africa that reflects the demographics of the country. The next thing is that we want to look at things like paid work and sex work. And we've spoken about introducing immediately upon arrival in Parliament the paid work, the Paid Care Act, Paid Care Work Act, as well as the Sex Act. Unpaid care work is where you take care of the sick and the elderly, and because you are a female, it is expected that you would do that without getting paid to do that. You either miss out on your education as well as other job and employment opportunities. We are going to criminalize and abolish unpaid care work in this country. You will be remunerated for doing formerly unpaid care work using a national scheme that will national state scheme that's going to remunerate
you. Out of interest, notwithstanding the fact that many of you here have got political identities, right? Why is there no cheers for that kind of very progressive proposal? Is it not progressive? Hey, I mean, women have been exploited without due recognition of what you do in the domestic sphere. And you are young. You're supposed to be woke and fluent in intersectional justice. And there's no response. I'd love to hear your responses when we come to the audience a little bit later. I don't know whether I'll vote for your party, but I think that issue is critically important. What will the Sex Act say?
The Sex Act, well, currently sex work in South Africa is criminalized, both the buying and the selling. Yeah. We are going to decriminalize sex work in South Africa, as well as create an entire justice system around it that will protect sex workers, ensuring that a criminal, any kind of criminal offenses recognized by the Sex Act are taken seriously, police officers are sensitized to it, as well as the establishment of delictual claims. So any kind of personal injury or delictual injury can be claimed against within the workspace.
Sorry, can I also interject?
Yeah, okay, go for it. Quickly.
Does that automatically mean you make sex work legal?
Oh, yes, it's legal.
Okay,
but the sensitive terminology is decriminalization, not just saying that it's legal. Because to say that it's legal is to talk about its morality. So we say decriminalization. Okay.
Pass on the mic for me. Let's hear from the BLF, Tabi.
Look, I just want to go back to what she said quickly. So decriminalizing sex work only is not going to solve black women's issues in this country, because the people that are most vulnerable in this industry are black women, and let's not beat around that. The problem in South Africa is economic racism. The problem in South Africa is the dispossession of black people. The problem in this country is that whatever industry you choose to decriminalize and regulate will be taken over by white power, and will therefore disenfranchise once again the already marginalized. So simply decriminalizing without a proper economic plan for those people, or without regaining any means of production for the black majority, which remain largely disproportionately in the hands of white people in this country. So
what are you guys, Tabi, speak to me about what BLF would do other than trolling Orania?
We are still going to Orania, by the way. So basically, BLF, we want to take back the land. That is the only solution to black people's problems in this country. You cannot not have means of production in your own country. You cannot not have means to feed your family in your own country. Black people's solution is land. It's simple. It's land.
Okay, thanks for keeping it short. There's detail, obviously, there, how you do that, etc. But I appreciate that as a high-level statement. Cornelius?
My apologies, sir. I beg to differ.
Okay.
I am disappointed that, you know, many years down the line, the quality of politicians we have in South Africa is so damn disappointing. It's damn disappointing. We've got a kind of politicians who go to dustbins to come with solutions. They never go into the future. They go to things that were thrown away to come with solutions. It's disappointing, man. It's disappointing. And let me tell you something. Every time when there's a problem, they fail to come with solutions. Every time there's a problem, their solution is nothing but disaster. Unfortunately, we've got a nyaupe kind of thinking in politicians. Now, let's clarify this. You cannot go to what is wrong and try to make it right. Prostitution is wrong. It will remain wrong. The reason there was prostitution, the reason there is prostitution, it's because the government has failed to deliver to the people of South Africa. Whoa, wait a minute. Your time has passed. The government, the current government, has failed the people of South Africa. That is why women has to sell their bodies to feed their kids. Let me tell you something.
So can I ask you this question to move the discussion forward, right? Yes. Give me one positive idea for how COPE would deal with youth unemployment other than sounding like the Freedom Front Plus.
I will tell you, it's very easy. It's very easy. If you are going to address the economic challenges of this country, you've got to make sure that first and foremost, if there's a politician that is corrupt, that politician must be damned, go under arrest, and must go to jail. I don't care who says what. And first and foremost, if we can deal with the issue of the stealing of the ANC, this country will be freed.
Hello.
Today, chief, listen to what I'm saying. Today, chief. In South Africa, we are going through economic situations because of the decisions that were made by corrupt leaders. I can tell you today that the ANC is funded by Iran. It's the same Iran that is stealing oil in Syria. It is funding the ANC. Now, the ANC has to now make sure that they do whatever that Iran is asking them to do. All I'm asking for, say, if there's a corrupt politician, we shouldn't even be giving any corrupt politician a chance to speak. They must be arrested for the sake of the people of South Africa.
Thank you. Yes. 9 minutes before 11 o'clock, this is a 2 hour 702 election debate, hashtag 702 election debate. I'm looking at my timeline, and many of you who are not physically present here are listening very closely and engaging very nicely. Thank you so much. Like you can hear, there's a lot of passion. What is South African politics, if not deeply evoking passion in many of us? Before I go to the rest of the parties, my panel members want to interject. I consider them to be my co-hosts for the next hour still and 10 minutes. And Sithembiso, you wanted to respond desperately.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think I'm concerned that Cornelius is telling us about something which other parties are doing. The question is, what is COPE going to do? How are they going to change the situation in our own country? You know? Because if you, you know, one thing that is very important is not, I'm still on the platform, chief. One thing that is very important is not outlining it. You need to tell us, how are they going to implement the land issue problem? How are they going to implement unemployment within our country? Those are the basics that we wanted to hear. We don't want you to tell us that ANC is corrupt, who's corrupt. Tell us, what is it that you're going to implement for us to vote for you? You know, but if you're not going to sell us something that will be tangible for us, then why must we be voting for you?
And can I just add on to it?
Before you do, Luando, what happens to your sentiment as you are hearing different politicians speak?
There's a big theme on land, right? And you said it's very high level and we don't have like the detail. But what I wanted to know, if the ruling party currently is telling me that they're doing something about it and the amendment is making its way through the processes, why should I look elsewhere? It seems like you're all saying the same thing. Okay,
well
unless I'm getting it wrong.
No, I'll come back to that. Fasia, you've been hearing how things are going. I never know with the ANC whether you guys deserve our votes or whether you are sometimes, in economic speak, the beneficiaries of externalities, i.e. the weaknesses of many of the other parties. Be that as it may, you've heard a lot going on. I know you're a very thoughtful politician. What do you want to say about where things are going in terms of the dialectic as it's unfolding?
Look, first thing that I think we need to talk about is we need to be progressive. We're leaders of society. So when we say that women who choose or may not necessarily actively choose sex work, but to call it prostitution, I think is fundamentally wrong and fundamentally counter-progressive, whether you agree with it or not. But more importantly, let's now actually talk about what the ANC has done, what we're planning on doing. As an ANC-led government, millions of people have houses, have access to electricity, clean drinking water. People from poor communities now have access to education, both on a basic and higher education. level. For the past 5 years, the number of HIV positive people on antiretroviral treatment has more than doubled, which means new infections are decreasing. 17.5 million people are now in beneficiaries of social grants. We've advanced the cause and rights of workers to organize, to galvanize, and to actually have their voices heard. We even have something around the minimum wage, which is going to ensure that people are paid decently. But it goes beyond that, right? As the ANC, we're not running away from our issues. And I'm going to speak very directly to the issue of corruption, right? And if you'll allow me, let me speak to corruption and then we can speak to the other issues.
Before you get there, because the ANC has this habit, right? Now, self-proclaimed, I am a political baby of the ANC. But the problem that the ANC has, it's a nice life sometimes. Sometimes, except when it turns. But the problem the ANC has is that it's very good at saying the stuff that it's done. Extremely good. And there's nothing wrong with that. However, what the ANC is bad, what the ANC is bad at doing is saying what are the things that we have not succeeded with. Right? So if someone says, we've built you schools, will the ANC in the same breath say, I've also built schools that have pit latrines that children have died in? If the ANC says, I've provided this economic boost in one particular way, will the ANC also say, by the way, these ward councillors were caught in corruption, we've suspended them, right? Will the ANC come out and say, these are the places over the past 20 years where we have failed, and this is what we're going to do to change it? Because that's what I, if you, let me finish. Because this is what I want to hear from the ANC.
Sure.
Because it's really nice to hear the good things, but I want to know where we have failed. This is how we're going to fix those failures. Because that's important.
Look, I think Hotsi's raised a fundamentally important point, right? No political party is perfect. The ANC by no means is not a flawless party. So let me talk particularly about what those issues are. And I'll speak about infrastructure, but I think the big elephant in the room that we need to speak about is corruption. And I think this is also particularly important because the current ANC in this new administration is not running away from it. We're very much aware of the problem, and it's something that we're dealing with head on as part of this renewal and this revival, not just of the ANC, but of governance and of the actual government. Now let's talk what we're actually doing. So apart from the hawks, apart from the MPA, the asset forfeiture unit, the president has been establishing the special investigative units that are specifically going to be and are currently dealing with corruption. In addition to the creation of SIUs, right, which is what I've just spoken about, there's also been the creation of what we call SIU tribunals, which means we'll be able to fast track the process of dealing with corruption. The president has been very, very clear. Where people are guilty, people are going to go to jail. And this is part of an investigation that goes beyond just, like I've said, the ANC. It's going into actual SOEs. We've been removing boards. We've been actually doing actual implementation.
We've got to take a commercial break in 20 seconds, right? And you are the closest thing to an honest ANC politician. So let's test your commitment.
I take that as a huge compliment.
No, it is a compliment. And it's interesting that you focus on corruption, because when Cornelius was... Don't worry, Tamagwini. The noise won't distract me from asking the question. Everyone was booing Cornelius. And I understand why, because he wasn't being solution-oriented. But he was the one who focused on corruption. You've now conceded that it is indeed a malaise in our country. Simple question. How many corrupt politicians have been jailed?
Thank you!
Thanks, Eusebius. There's a few things that I need to speak about when we're talking about the jailing of corrupt politicians. The first thing is that we do exist in a democratic country, right? We have to allow due process to take place. It can't be where X person accuses Hotsi of Eusebius, you're guilty of corruption, now we must just arrest you. Of course, due process must take place, right? And we have to allow that to happen, and that is currently what is happening. The fact of the matter is that when those processes conclude, we'll then be able to get a couple of lists and we'll actually be able to implement physically what we're talking about.
Okay. In other words, vote for us, and then we will renew ourselves in June.
Vote ANC on the 8th of May, because we continuously and do currently
put
the process of renewal forward.
Okay, so just to tell you guys how we're going to also speak to the issues, and I want to thank them for their patience. so far. They haven't been part of the first half of the conversation. After that, I'm going to come to the audience, and then I'm going to look at social media, and then we'll come back to the panel as well. But if you are listening anywhere in the world and you're listening to this conversation digitally, whatever platform, please engage us on Twitter. Use the hashtag 702 election debate. 8 minutes after 11 o'clock. Thank you so much for staying with us. This is the third and final hour of the Eusebius McKaiser show. And if you've just joined us, you are in time for the second half of what has been a passionate first half debate thus far on the election issues in general as they affect our nation. And what has been particularly awesome, certainly for me as a analyst and broadcaster, is listening very closely to the articulation of the most important issues that we need to grapple with as a society, as expressed by my panel members, who are active, smart, interesting young South Africans, and also the politicians, who are the ones that will be taking over the reins from the elders in their parties as well. Remember, the hashtag to use on Twitter is 702 election debate. And thank you so much. I can see from this being a trending hashtag and some of your tweets around it, how many of you are engaging the content way beyond what's happening on your radio right now. We want to move the conversation forward and give some of the other political parties who haven't yet spoken an opportunity to do so. By the way, data has fallen at 702. We're very progressive. If you're in the room here, there is Wi-Fi. The username and password is Summit and Summit. So we are leading here. We're not just critiquing the government as well. And if you need to know that, just ask my producers if you are struggling to log on. So you can tweet to your heart's content. And don't say that Uncle Eusebius has not given you free data. Use the hashtag 702 election debate. I want to hear from the Democratic Alliance. Luyolo, you have been sitting very patiently and listening to what's going on. I want to know what's in your thought bubble right now.
Having me, and good morning to the listeners.
Okay, the audio is not very great. I think we need to get the levels up. I'm buying time and seeing whether we can fix that problem round about now. Let's see whether we can fix that mic very quickly, Abel. Otherwise, you'll just use mine. So there are many issues here. We obviously can't problem solve for all of them.
Sure.
I'm mindful of that constraint. Mm-hmm. I will give you the liberty of telling me what you find most salient that you want to speak into.
Namely, I think there's two issues that we as the DA find very compelling, or at least very important in this election. I think those two things for us is the economy and corruption. I think as a point of departure, one thing that we need to recognize is that a capable state that is corrupt or that has corruption within its government departments can never deliver a concrete plan, can never deliver on the mandate and the programs that it proposes to South Africans, right? So as a point of departure, I think that's the first thing. But above and beyond that, what is more central is the economy, right? The economy currently in this country is growing at levels far less than our counterparts, right? You're looking at Senegal, you're looking at Rwanda, who are growing at 7%, 6%. So the DA's plan to turn this economy around is, quite simply put, this is the only party that has a plan that directly impacts and speaks to young people. We want to launch the National Civilian Youth Service, which basically speaks to young people to say that we understand that young people in this country who at most are semi-skilled to non-skilled, don't have the skills. I want to face you and tell you what's happening. They don't have the skills to deliver and to find jobs in this economy, right?
Can I ask you this question? The initiative that you've just
so what I want to say, Eusebius,
articulated.
Can I just finish this point quickly?
Don't worry.
You'll have your full
education of time.
Okay.
So don't worry about that.
Sure.
When I interrupt you, it's for a very productive purpose to make sure that you articulate yourself as compellingly as possible. The initiative that you're talking about, can you give me a few more sentences around it? Just put some meat to the bones.
Sure. So I'm speaking here about the National Civilian Youth Service that the DA wants to launch for young people, to give young people skills. Because what we understand in this country is that people don't have jobs because they don't have the skills or the experience to find this job. So when we speak about the National Civilian Youth Service, what we are saying is that we are not monitoring outputs, we are monitoring outcomes. So we take into consideration the young people that come into this program for a year where they receive the skills. We want to find out how sustainable this program is for those young people.
Leon, hold on, slow down. I'm asking a simple question. Maybe you're not listening to my question. What is it?
So the Civilian Youth Service is, quite simply put, is a skills development program, a year-long program for young people to be able to grow their skills within this economy. And yeah, we're looking at entry-level jobs as the skills that are being enhanced and developed. The difference between the national...
Before we get there, I want practicalities, right? So I've just passed my matric.
Sure.
I didn't get into VITS.
Mm-hmm.
President Maimane is in charge.
Sure.
You are the new Minister of Economic Development. Mm-hmm. What do you do with me? I'll come to you. I'm ready for your program. Where do you ship me off to?
So in essence, what we want to do is we want to give young people skills. So what we've done, for example, in the Western Cape, we have youth cafes where young people go... In the Western Cape, across, yes. What you find in the Western Cape is that young people are able to go into these youth cafes, learn how to write a business plan, how to get entrepreneurship programs, so that they are able to find the skills that they are required to have. But more and above that, we want to connect these young people to enterprises within government so that they can use those skills. Because at the center of this issue is that young people don't have experience and therefore they cannot find jobs in this economy. We have an economy that's growing at 0.7%, which is actually not even expensive enough to increase and include young people into the economy.
Hold on, I want my panel to engage you, because it sounds to me suspiciously like expanded public works program 2.0.
And it's not. Sure.
Okay, so first and foremost, I'm going to echo what the crowd has been saying. We're in the Western Cape. And secondly, it's all good and well that you speak about assisting the youth in becoming skilled. But here's a big question for you, right? Back in 2015 and 2016, you had the opportunity to actually get involved in what was called Fees Must Fall, right? The DA was not fundamentally involved in that. They had no mass mobilization there, right? So I have a big problem, including the fact that Helen Ziller herself slandered us on Twitter, right? So in the situation of Fees Must Fall, where was the DA and why were you not involved in that? You speak about youth and helping the youth, but why were you not on the forefront of the movement with the youth and were standing there?
Sure. I'll take that question. Thank you. I think, was my mic off the whole time?
It was on. We heard you.
Okay. All right. So let me take that question, and I hope you, CBS, you can allow me to finish my point.
Yeah, I do. I still want to know, if I'm a matric tomorrow, where is this cafe? Is it here by News Cafe? What is it?
Sure.
It sounds very cool.
Sure. So let's start with the question on Fees Must Fall. I don't think that's a correct statement to make, to say DA or DASO was not involved in Fees Must Fall.
Let him speak, guys. So
here's the thing, guys. I've been asked a question. Let me respond. Can I be afforded a response? Let me respond.
Go ahead,
to the
Leolo.
Question. I've barely said a couple of words before everybody interjected. Can I finish my point?
Okay.
Thank you.
Can we just give him some space to respond? I don't mind us speaking at the same time if the main speaker can still be heard.
Thank you.
So
what I
want
to say, that Fees Must Fall, there's been an attempt to make it political and political parties capturing, saying that they led Fees Must Fall. But as a person, as a person who was at WITS, who was a student at WITS, I was part of Fees Must Fall. I was there all the time wearing my DASO t-shirt. Maybe I might have been alone, but I was there.
For starters,
if you look at institutions like Nelson Mandela University, Fort Hare, DASO was involved in those particular elections. DASO was there fighting in the front lines, trying to fight this particular thing. And even when the president had the commission on fees must fall. We were there through Yusuf Kasim, who was representing the DA. Okay. So I don't think it's fair to make that allegation that we weren't involved, because we were involved. Those inputs that we submitted for the plan of the president, they were included. When the president called that meeting at the union buildings, we made submissions and inputs onto that commission. So for you to say we have not contributed is not correct.
Can I give you some information, right? For starters, fees must fall was non-partisan. That's for starters, right? Secondly, from my personal experience of being involved in that movement, I did not see DASO or the DA. Who I did see was PYA and the EFF, right?
That's
who
not correct.
Then at the same time had agreed on the fact that it was non-partisan.
Yeah, can I ask you this question? And I'm going to restrict you to 30 seconds, right? There's no law that can prescribe you what issues should be salient for you when you are in the voters' booth. Why is the visibility or lack thereof of DASO for you something that's critical as a younger South African when you think about whether you'd vote for them?
So I feel like that is a very important question. The fact of the matter is, if I'm going to be standing in those voters' poll as a young South African, as a student leader, as someone who was part of the movement called Fees Must Fall, I want to be aware of those people who were there standing in front, who were leading me for that. The fact
but
of the
were
matter,
you at every institution? Did you do a census to check?
That's incorrect. Was
it
every even in the situation,
you cannot say that factually. You cannot say that factually. No.
We're going to move on.
You cannot say that
hold
factually.
On.
You were hold on. Not at every campus to say and make a statement to say that DASO was not at any campus.
That's
factually incorrect.
Leola, hold on. Right? Okay, let me give you guys this assurance.
That's factually incorrect.
There's still a lot of time between now and May the 8th. I will come back to all of the main parties who are here. I may even invite some of you for a more one-on-one conversation, right? There are issues here we've got to park, and it's going to be inherently unsatisfying if you're a politician. For example, Yolo, when I'm listening to the exchange between the two of you as a commentator, and honestly, I really am a floating voter. I could vote DA. I don't know who I'm going to vote for. I hear what she's saying in the following light, and I'm just going to comment as a commentator and then park it. I hear a credibility gap that the DA has on questions of struggle. That, for me, is the bigger theme. The immediate issue is where were you? But it's not really about where were you. It's about whether you could speak eloquently in response to what Tabi was saying when she talks about economic racism. Do we trust you on race? Do we trust you on the black experience? Do we trust you on struggle? I think that's what she's getting at, right? But I will afford you, I give you my word live on air, I'll give you an opportunity to express a view on those cluster of issues unencumbered by a crowd. How's that? Okay? For the moment, I want to move on to Peter. Peter is with the EFF.
No, thanks very much, Eusebius and your listeners out there. Look, I think we want to touch on two points firstly. Number one, which is the youth unemployment. I mean, we have been speaking about creation of employment, creation of jobs, but none of us speaks about how is that going to happen. I mean, you can't just open the closet or jobs just fall off the sky, and then the next thing we have jobs. There must be a plan on how the jobs are going to be created, right? Which is why the EFF speaks about the industrialization of South African economy. So you have to establish industries where you are going to be able to absorb these young people. For instance, South Africa, as we speak, there is a lot that we are continue to import. Some of the things that are necessary to import, the things that do not even need sophisticated skills for us to produce, like a toothpick, my brother, right? So those, some of the things, Eusebius, some of the things, well, just. So to be brief also, because there are a lot of issues we need to cover. There are a lot of issues we have to cover, right? You have a problem in this country of young people, many young people not being employed, right? And you, many of them, right, you will have young people who are unemployed. So these young people are uneducated. You'll have young people who are parents, right? The parents, young people. You have young people who are graduates. You have young people who are, you know, just loitering around doing nothing. And you ask yourself that what is happening? And us, with the experience we have of being on the ground, And we are able to then diagnose what is the problem. What is it? And what we have diagnosed when I use CBS is that, you know, there is a gap in terms of understanding, one would say political consciousness amongst young people. And, you know, that is why you see the high level of decline in terms of percentages of young people participating in a democratic electoral process.
Peter, can I ask you this question, right? I hear what you are saying. Your commander-in-chief was last Thursday on my show.
Yeah.
I thought, I mean, not that my opinion counts so much, but I think it was one of the most thoughtful interviews that he'd given. But where he struggled the most was on the economics question. Because the problem is that you guys articulate, you're right. It's my subjective view, so sorry to other parties. I think the EFF does better than any other party in articulating the lived experience of disaffected youth. But here's the problem. Guys, it's my opinion. You can do nothing about it. All you can do is tell me why you disagree. So getting heated is not going to help you. Remember, the only thing you CBS fears is good argument, not disagreement per se. But here's where Juju was not very convincing. Mm-hmm. It's very easy when you're not the incumbent ANC government or any incumbent government to list outcomes that are obviously outcomes we all would desire, but you don't have a magic wand. So when I listen to you, I've got a similar problem as with Tando. If we had more detail with her that we could go to on the land question, it becomes harder once you're actually the government of the day. So when we asked Julius to explain the economic mechanism for how you get from 0.7% currently to 6% within 12 months, there's no detail. But more specifically, I didn't even get to half of the things in your manifesto. Your manifesto make me want to go and complete my PhD that I abandoned, because one of the many things that you can promise, because you have the luxury as the opposition, and I want you to comment on this, is that you can promise things that are completely not feasible, like R1 million for every PhD graduate.
Look, a brief comment. CBS, right? So the growth of economy, remember, in South Africa, there is a lot of people who are poor, right? And whether the rent is up or down, they are still poor. They go to sleep hungry. So when we say we want to take the land, right, we want to expropriate the land without compensation, we want to, you know, nationalize the mines and the banks, right? We do that knowing very well that it is one of the most bold economic steps that any country can ever take, right? We don't conform to these, you know, standards of growing economy by the West. The West will tell you that if you want to grow economy, this is the path you must take. But it has never assisted us in anyhow. The manifesto of the EFF remains the only path and the only route to uproot poverty in this country, to uproot inequality in this country, to make sure that the question of unemployment is thoroughly and adequately addressed.
Peter. Look, okay,
we are addressing that. Relax.
Okay, fair enough. I hear you, Peter. Give the
what we are saying. What we are saying here now. When let's say EFF takes government tomorrow, when I say let's say, and then I say tomorrow, I know it won't happen tomorrow. It will happen on the 8th of May. Peter. On the 8th of May, after the commander-in-chief is inaugurated, after we deliver him in Matamba Ndlovu there, and Union Building,
Peter.
What we are going to ensure, Peter. Right, when I used to be asked, number one, of course, is the question Peter. Of the land. But leader, can I speak Peter. Also? Wait, man, yes. Wait.
Okay, but Peter, you got to speak more efficiently, yes. Though. I'm really trying to hear your... Before you intervene, just finish the point in 10 seconds.
Correct. Look, after we take government... Yep. Immediately after we take government, when you look at our manifesto, we don't speak about any point without putting time frame. Wait, comrades, wait. We say we are going to do this in a space of X number of years, right? We are going to do this in a space of X number of years. That has been equally calculated that it is really indeed doable. We can't just write things that are not doable.
Sitembiso, a comment?
You know, Peter, I'm quite listening to you speaking. It's like you are singing for young kids.
You know, what do you mean? Chief?
Let me tell you one thing, my brother. There's one thing that I love about your party. You guys are always telling us we'll do this, we'll do that. For the past 4 years, you guys are part of the parliament. There's nothing that you have changed.
You are lying. You are lying. We said we are going to stop Nkandla corruption. We did stop that. Whoa. We said we'll remove Jacob Zuma from the seat of president. We removed him. We said we are going to give credibility to the office of the public protector. We did exactly that. What do you mean we didn't do anything? And remember, we are not even running government. We are just on the opposition benches in parliament. We are not running government. What are you saying?
Okay, Peter, I'm going to ask you to... Peter? Okay, hold on. Can I just take control back of this dialogue?
Today, these people are speaking.
Peter? Okay, mother, please take Peter's mic and give it to Mkuleko. Give it to Mkuleko. Okay. Hold on 1 second. Guys, my other job is as a bouncer, eh? I don't want to bounce anyone. let's just respect the rules of engagement. I understand your frustration with his comment. I think you did well in the last parliament. Very briefly, what is the sentiment you want to express to Tembi? So?
My sentiment was that they always see problems, but they are not giving us solutions. That's why I'm saying that they are singing instead of giving us solutions.
But just to be fair, Nim, just a critical question back to you, though. I mean, would Jacob Zuma have gone as quickly as he did, to take just one example, if it wasn't for the oversight role in Parliament of the EFF, to be
no,
fair on them?
No, it's not them that made Jacob Zuma to be removed from the Parliament.
Not mechanistically, but are you saying that these guys honestly did not play an important role in the fifth Parliament in terms of oversight?
No, no, no.
Okay, Mkuleko.
Thank you very much, Eusebius, and good morning to... Evan, I just want to touch on maybe three things very, very briefly. And I think at the outset, the critical issue that has come out, particularly from your panel, is the issue of youth representation specifically, but citizenry representation in general, insofar as the electoral system of this country is concerned. And that is fundamentally the disconnect which exists between elected representatives and the citizenry, simply because we've got this PR, proportional representation system, where accountability, as correctly put, is to headquarters and not to the citizens. So as the IFP, one of the things was to introduce the 18th Constitutional Amendment Bill, Private Members Bill, which sought to separate the office of head of state and head of government so that a president could be elected directly as a means of trying to, you know, accountability. I think one of the issues raised was that a president was removed under questionable democratic processes. So had we actually elected a president directly, you could have been able to tap into that in a far more different way. Moreover, the Van Zyl Slabbert report, when Prince Buthelezi was Minister of Home Affairs, amongst the other things that it spoke about, fundamentally was a constituency-based, kind of electoral system where members of parliament would be elected directly. I think there's big merit in saying that the political electoral system of the country is creating high levels of mistrust, because even the manner in which constituency offices are operational and instituted are actually quite problematic. So there does need to be a change in that particular section of our constitutional discourse. So I just thought I zoom into that, because fundamentally it speaks to the extent to which South Africans are quite concerned about their representatives. And yes, the comment in the back may be this is a youth debate. Young people are not outside the politics of South Africa. They're not outside the electoral system. And it is this system which is causing...
Can I ask you this pointed question, right?
Sure.
Why should a young person in Kunu vote for the IFP?
All right. So I said I wanted to touch on three issues. That was the first one. Second one goes to the exact issue of the economy and voting for the IFP. We have, as the IFP in our manifesto very pointedly said, the key areas need to be local economic development. And we are speaking about a national mapping exercise whereby you identify the strengths of communities and areas and demographics so that you can actually be able to build up the economic capabilities of those areas. Our fundamental outlook is that all economics and all politics is local. So we do need to create spaces in our community. Let me make this example. If Area X is strong agriculturally, we need to then create, build up the capabilities of that agricultural sector from creating the necessary knowledge, skills and expertise, making sure that our TVET colleges, for example, are not institutions of circumstance, but institutions of choice. So build up the infrastructure, ensure that you've got lecturers who are equal to the task. So at the heart of it is to say the high level jobless growth initiatives that we have seen over the past few years have not actually yielded the results that we need.
Let me just pause you there because I just got to go to my colleague and then my co-presenters here want to jump in, and then sure. The audience wants to jump in as well.
Connect. Engage. Change. This is 702 for the curious.
23 minutes before noon, Nkuleko Shlengwa is of course with the IFP. As you are speaking, Nkuleko, I'm watching what's going on in Twitter just to see what people's reactions are to all of the politicians. And here is one that is typical of people's responses. You have made two of your 3 points. Keep the last one very short for me, but I think this one is relevant. It's a compliment with a qualification. Sure, says Nozipo. The IFP's rep is so calm and clear. I really wish that their leader would let go of power and hand it over to young people. Because young people have been kept out, and seems like he is the lone young voice in the old wilderness.
You see,
you agree with her?
Well, no, I don't. Of course, we have got a duty and a responsibility as a party to take the public into our confidence all the time, and I'd like to do that. Now, first and foremost, we as the IFP are very proud of the leadership of Prince Buthelezi. We think he has done well, and we credit him for all the successes and gains within the IFP. Secondly, Prince
Buthelezi,
and Prince Buthelezi secondly has indicated that he's stepping down. We have announced in January that our conference is in July, so conference will take place. We have nominated Comrade Velenkosi Nhlabisa to be the next president. Thirdly, if you look at the top five of the IFP to national parliament, if you just look at the list, three of the five are all people below the age of 40. Fourthly, I recall at some point in this country at the age of 24, Mkhuleko Hlengwa was the youngest member of parliament. So I'm not so sure as to where the youth space can be said to have been closed down. We've got a youth councillors forum, which is representative of all our councillors who are young people, who are some of them serving in ESCO's mayors, deputy mayors and speakers, was looking at that. Eusebius, what is fundamentally important, of course, for us is that a generational mix in any party leadership is very important to share and borrow experiences from each other. And we fundamentally believe that no generation on its own can take this country forward. And we recognize the fact that we have had challenges as a party, but at the same time, we have worked flat out to deal with those. It's precisely why...
Nkuleko, it's 20 to noon. I like you. But I'm going to be blunt, you know, I'm characteristically blunt. Your brand as IFP is tired and anachronistic. If you look at the data, let's go into electoral history since 1994. Declining electoral fortunes. Many people like you as an individual politician, but your party, not so much. Why should the people who are listening out there in the world be attracted to an IFP that sounds like it belongs to an era when all of us were still in nappies?
Well, even that too would be a very misguided and myopic outlook. I think people must take the time to look at what we're presenting. We've got a very clear manifesto, a very practical and pragmatic intervention plan for this country. And we are the first ones to say we admit that there have been shortcomings in the party, and we are working to deal with those. Looking historically, as you say, Eusebius, in 2016 we went into those local government elections governing two municipalities. We came out governing 13. You look at the fact that we've been winning by-elections. So we are on a trajectory of growth. It has not been easy. But at the same time, we appreciate the fact that, one, there has been an honest conversation about the IFP in South Africa, people giving us their views, their opinions, taking those on board, responding positively to them, because we recognize we're not immune to criticism. It's precisely why when allegations of corruption are leveled against public representatives of the IFP, we are quick to take them out of office. So we are walking our talk. But what I'm saying is that we have presented a practical, pragmatic intervention plan. We've got a track record of service delivery where we have governed and where we are governing insofar as growth, economic growth is concerned, okay, financial
just
management.
30 seconds. Thakia is worried about jobs, right? You say you've got a plan. I mean, Leola wants to take me to News Cafe. What are you going to do to get me employed?
Look, good luck with News Cafe. I'm sure most of us want to go there just for coffee, not for a job. What we are saying as the IFP fundamentally is that we need an education system which, amongst two things in the main, creates job creators. So we need to enhance innovative thinking, progressive thinking, and new ideas. So science, technology, and innovation, classroom of the future, whether it's basic education or higher education. Let me put it this way. We need to go back to the basics of our times. Look at the changes in the curriculum. They are an indication or an admission by the present government that our education system has been a failure from A to Z. So let us take the time to go back. Secondly, we've got a serious challenge in South Africa of a failure to plan forwardly. We know that at the end of every year, we're going to produce, give or take, 400,000 grade 12s. But we do not have 400,000 spaces and institutions of higher learning. And yet, in a mad rush of 6 weeks, you want to place 400,000 students. So those are all the things which for us say, let's go back to basics, build up the capacity and space. The issue of accommodation that has been raised is something which should be part and parcel of day-to-day planning of institutions. Okay. And the fact that these problems are prevalent is an indication of a system that is unable to self-correct. And our manifesto, our plan, is pragmatic and practical enough to be responsive to those realities.
Would you vote for him? Yeah. Yolandi. Okay, let's hear from Yolandi. Yolandi is from the ATM, the last party represented here. All of these ideas are great, but we need money. Can we draw some money from the ATM?
We'll have to wait and see. Good morning to the viewers. Thank you for having me, Eusebius. I'm sitting here and I'm listening, and obviously we are the part of the infantile or the newer parties and haven't gotten the chance to govern. But I want to start first by addressing something that was brought up by Lwando in the panel about what is it that makes us different, or what is it that you think would make us not get to parliament and change. I want to emphasize that from the onset, when we were setting up the ATM, we decided to take a stance that we would be a self-funding party. People came, they looked at us, they said the ideas are great, but you're not going to make it. You walk around, you see people, there's posters everywhere, there's billboards, there's whatever. The ATM is different because the ATM members, as we call ourselves, our servants, are on the ground speaking to the people. What makes us different is that we are people. We are the former VIT students that had to drop out because of funds. We are the people that are representative of the traditional leadership. So that self-funding stance, the reason we took it was because we didn't want to, at the time when we get into parliament, have to now address the needs of our funders rather than those of the people. And that is something that we're very proud of, that since inception in June, right up until now, we've been able to do it with the real money that we have. We're all volunteers. We work, we print t-shirts ourselves, we print posters, because we're passionate about the people of South Africa. Secondly, then I want to talk about what we want to stand for when it comes to growing the economy and stuff. I want to start with education. With education, basic education seems to be neglected in South Africa. We're looking at tertiary education and we're looking at FISMAS 4, and that's very important. But if you look at basic education and you look at the fact that our learners are not educated, we want to introduce a compulsory education system. So when a child is born and they are registered at Home Affairs and whatever, there should be a follow-up system. Are those children in schools? Because studies show that we've got amongst the highest rates of children between five, the age of five, and early development that are not in school. That's the first thing. The education system system. We are a country that's got minerals, that's got all these things, but our system is westernized based. We create an education system that's around the things that we have. We should be teaching skills of mining, manufacturing, all these things within the school sector. Because what happens is the children that go to tertiary education have a higher employability than those that don't. So then, even if you don't have access to higher education, but you've got a skill set that will allow you for you to be able to craft your skill and make a living. Thirdly,
very quickly, Yvonne.
Yes, we want to address the issue of the microeconomy. And the reason I'm saying we want to address the issue of the microeconomy, it goes back to the fact that access to tertiary education is a problem, which means that we're saying as ATM, we want the microeconomy to be used for the exclusive use of South African citizens. The microeconomy in the townships, in the rural areas, in the inner cities, because those are the people that should be benefiting from it, because they're the taxpayers. That money must rotate within that, in that economy. So that's what. And lastly, yeah.
No. You can't have many lastlies. I wish I was a fly in the wall when that party was conceived. I'd have loved to know how the conversation went around the acronym. Yeah, ATM. They're going to think we have lots of money, but it works logically.
And it's catchy.
Okay, I want to hear from, and it's catchy as well. You're right.
Okay, Mutlawan Mudupi from Center for Development and Enterprise. My question goes to the DA. You guys reject ANC's BE model. So what is the alternative policy model exactly, keeping in mind that many white-owned corporates use all these fronting schemes to get lucrative BE contracts?
Okay, thanks. My name is Baga. I don't know if I'm allowed to ask all of them, but I'll try to be fast.
I just asked a question.
Okay. One question.
One person, one question.
I wanted to direct it to the EFF guy, Peter. Peter, last week your CIC was here with Eusebius. We tried to listen. And then you speak about the growth of the economy. And some of the aspects or the elements of growing the economy, it speaks about the government expenditure. You don't say anything about that. It speaks about investment. You don't say anything about that. It speaks about income consumption, increasing the income of people so that they can participate in growing the economy. You don't say anything about that. You speak about toothpick. Your president was here. He came here and spoke about selling school jerseys. Those are not the fundamental issues when you speak about growing the economy. I want to speak about what we can see today, that when we were speaking about a tactical recession, the president deployed people to go international to bring investment. What is it that is happening today? We see the symptoms of growth. Those are signals of the systems that you say you don't believe in. When we say that there's a recession, people were retrenched, you understand? Because
can I leave it there? You are so lucid, it's not even funny. I would vote for you. That's beautiful question.
I wanted to educate you.
The question is well understood.
But you must deal with that.
My brother, let me give you communication advice. Quit while you're ahead. You were crystal clear. Third question.
Sure, my name is Olane Govuzela, right? I have a question for the ANC. However, Eusebius, you asked a question, Hori, if you are a matriculant and what is it that we're going to do for you as the DAU, right? Having the liberty to have worked and consulted in the CITAS, the constructions and the services in Gauteng, I've actually outrolled a whole lot of learning programs. There are 7 learning programs. And Gauteng, I had for construction, national for services. We can deploy you to have learning programs within the as each and every company there is.
Yeah, yes. What's your question?
My question is, at the end of you being a poor lawyer, in Gauteng, to the ANC, in Gauteng, you understand why is it that you've been called names? Because the crime
system,
the crime system is very bad. We're having exchanges of money there.
Okay,
How is it that the ANC is going to solve the crime within within Gauteng so that we can have a safety and free country?
Sharp. Last question.
Thank you very much. My name is Musi. my name is Musi, but not my money. I'm from Soweto in one of the poor informal settlements called Cliptown. My question, because of I've heard what my brother from the IFP has said, he was so good in what he was saying, but...
What's your question? Don't fall in love with him. Just ask the question.
Yes. My question is that as everyone knows that land in terms of land, it has three components, which is a social, spiritual, and economical value. And then it has the potential to the foundation of the renewal economy. I just wanted to check what is the position of the almighty IFP in relation to addressing the issue of land.
Thank you, Aloysius.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
On 702.
Okay, we're wrapping up our hashtag 702 election debate. We literally only have 3 or 4 minutes left. It's been a stunning debate. Obviously, many of these issues we can still pursue in the weeks ahead. I'm going to ask the politicians to please respond in a very pointed manner to questions that had been directed at them. Firstly, we're going to start with you, Mkuleko. I'm not sure whether that was supposed to be a tough question or it's a backbench softball question to a minister in government. Either way, you've got about 45 seconds.
CBS, I think it's important at the outset to say the issue of land is non-negotiable. And so we believe that there does need to be one expropriation, but we add the caveat of with compensation. We believe Section 25 is sufficient for us to achieve what it is that we want to achieve. Thirdly, as the IFP, we believe that any land reform, land redistribution, and land restitution is to form part and parcel of a broader economic package for the country so that we can be able to make maximum use, because the argument out there is the issue of land is going to unlock economic growth, but we need to define what that growth, what that development is. So all in all, the IFP...
Can we leave it there for today?
So, okay, sure. But I'm saying that the IFP certainly stands on the side that there does need to be expropriation. I think the fundamental
discussion... But you want to compensate and you don't want to change the constitution.
For sure.
Okay. Yeah. That's very helpful. That helps some people make up their mind about you. Peter, that's going to be a longer debate. We'll find some other forum to ventilate it properly. That was a beautiful and serious question. You said that if something is written down in a manifesto, then it must have been costed. The gentleman at the back is correct. Putting it in a manifesto doesn't mean you've done the costing.
Look, I think there's a fool there. There's a fool there at the back who think I'll just in a space of 30 seconds speak about the manifesto, the whole 170. Points of no, obviously I won't raise the whole 170 pages manifesto in 30 seconds. It's impossible, right? So the manifesto of the EFF is very clear. It's very clear in terms of the approach and how we are going to implement things, right? He's correct. The commander in chief is just referring to the manifesto of the EFF. Same thing is say. Someone will go and speak about page 38. I will come and speak about page 102 of the manifesto of the EFF. You can't come here and say no, now you fair. Didn't speak about the
that's
other
fair.
Page.
Peter, we're going to leave it there. That's fair. I'll find an opportunity for us to ventilate that more fully in future. I get what you are saying. Mm. I do think his question is still pertinent. I wouldn't call him a fool. I think the two of you could
perhaps
have an interesting
must
debate.
Answer
I'm happy,
his question.
I'm
if, happy he ask, slay, if he asks a question.
Please don't speak at the same time as me. I'm happy to referee an economics debate between the two of you. I'll make it happen. The ANC, you got a question specifically about criminality.
Right. So on the issue of crime, I think it's multifaceted. But the first and more important issue is around partnering with community policing forums. This is not just about increasing the number of police who are out on the streets. I also think we need to be very clear that we need to, in fact, tighten gun control. And more importantly, we can deal with the actual symptomatic issue of crime, but we also need to do it in a preventative measure, which is an economic question, which in many ways is also what's come up. And I think particularly important, and I've said earlier, in terms of the economic element, we need to push, and this is something the ANC is going to do, on our already successful industrial schemes, the special economic zones, which I'm happy to unpack at a later stage, and even this idea of this black industrialist program, which I think is really, really powerful. But in closing, one last point. On the question, and I forgot to mention it, the president earlier this year announced the removal of work experience for entry-level jobs. This is a huge success for young people who have historically been unable to get jobs because of all of these barriers to entry. So we've done things, we're doing things, and we will continue to do things post the 8th of May when everybody votes ANC.
I want to thank everyone for coming to this particular debate today. Many of the issues need to be pursued more fully, but I really think that And you can see from the social media comments, including the non-partisan ones, and this is very sincere, that many of you have been praised by people who say, I may not agree with this person, I may not agree with their party, but I really think they're compelling. And as much as I think Nkuleka was diplomatic and convincingly so about the importance of intergenerational dialogue, for me, one of the most awesome things about the last 2 hours is the demonstration of the intellectual and political capability of younger South Africans. We need more of you, all of you, on stage and in the audience to be seconded, quite frankly, to Parliament and positions of leadership in corporate South Africa. That's it from the show.